Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Call to me, and I will answer you and show you great and mighty things which you do not yet know. That is Jeremiah 33, verse 3. I am Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today. And we pray you will find inspiration to step up, encouragement to stay up, and hope to look up through this show. Please welcome our guest today, adoptive mom and founder of Into the Field, Ohio native Jennifer Cameron. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Good morning, Sandra.
It's great to have you on today, and I'm so looking forward to you sharing your story. Let's kind of go back and lay the foundation. You grew up with a heart to serve and to travel, and share with us about the early part of your journey, which laid that foundation for who you are and what you do today.
Sounds good. Well, I am the blessed eldest daughter of two amazing parents who just celebrated their 50th anniversary. Wow. I know it's awesome. It's such an example. I grew up in a family of faith and can't really remember a time when Jesus wasn't a part of my life. As with any relationship, there are times when we were closer or that I've taken a half step back, but never a time when I didn't know who he was and whose I am. My parents have always modeled for my sisters and I lives of service and ministry. And for as long as I can remember, as you mentioned, I've always loved kids and different cultures and helping others.
Wow. And then you went to Bible school, correct?
No. Well, I went to Hope College, which is a Christian college up in Michigan. Oh. And I studied business and communications there. But obviously, the faith component was integrated into all that we did.
Yeah. And you mentioned to me that you actually went on like a trip to Alaska.
Yep. Tell us about that. Well, so my journey to China did start on a dirt road in Quinnahook, Alaska, which is a small Yupik village. And I was there doing VBS with a group from my church. And a friend and I were taking a walk out to the Bering Sea and chatting about how things were going. And he said that he had been asked to lead a team to China with one of the ministries that our church supported and wondered if I'd like to help him co-lead. And my response was, no, I don't think China's for me. I'll be coming back to Alaska. Wow. And needless to say, I have not been back to Alaska, but I've now been to China 10 times and have two Chinese daughters.
Yeah. So tell us, how did you get to China the first time and what happened from there?
Yeah. Well, on my early trips, we went to rural central China and did some projects in schools. We invited groups of Chinese nursing students to join us, and we did some health assessments on the kids as well as some fun activities there. These were schools that didn't have running water, and the bathrooms were holes dug into the ground behind a cinder block wall and kind of opened up to the sky. I remember one time, so when the team, when we'd need to go, one would go and the other would stand out kind of keeping guard, if you will. Yeah. And you're trying to get yourself situated because obviously adult bodies are different size than little kids' bodies. And all of a sudden one would come zipping in and be like, incoming. And they're kind of looking at you funny as you're not only American, but you're trying to figure out how this whole thing works. And, you know, lots of good laughs in that area. But anyhow, we were both serving the schools and building relationships with the nursing students. I love to learn languages. So I'd ask the nursing students to help teach me how to speak Mandarin. Mm-hmm. And it helped them to feel important because they were helping me. And then we also all got a good laugh when I'd mess up the tones and as a result say very wrong things that sometimes mortified my English speaking Mandarin friends. They're like, no, don't say that. But that's okay. But I'll never forget at the end of one of those trips, we were doing a debrief with some of the students, nursing students with us. And one of the guys said, I'm really glad I met you because before this, I didn't know that I could just go and help others because that volunteerism was not something that has long been involved in their culture. But then he also said, before meeting you, I thought all American women were like those Desperate Housewives. So like, well, we're glad we could help break that stereotype. You know, when my first trips were before there was a lot of free flowing on the internet. And so there were just some limited shows that got let in, and that was one of them. So that is what he thought we all looked like. But we went back to some of the same schools multiple years in a row. So we were able to connect and build relationships with some of the elementary students. And there was one little girl that I particularly connected with, and I remember meeting her on the first day, and she ran up wearing what I know was her best dress. You know, when you got close, you could see that it was pretty thin. But she was carrying a little bouquet of partially wilted gardenias that she had picked from the bushes along the school. And I took her picture. The next year, we went back to the same school, and I took that picture of her. And the smile on her face when she saw it was just so awesome. She just lit up. So I took a picture of her holding the picture of her. And then I was able to do that at the same time. So 3 years in a row. And it was just, I think, and these kids at this school had families and stuff. It was just a very rural, very poor community. And knowing that we cared enough, and one of the teachers through a translator said, you know, it means so much that you care enough to come all the way here just mm-hmm. to do this for us. But, on other trips, I've served at American-run foster homes, and you know, I know that there are different feelings in the orphan care community about that. For me, I feel really good about the way things did. As with the village school that I talked about, you know, I've returned to the same places multiple years in a row. So we were able to build relationships. And I was able to get to know actually the families of several of those kids who have since been adopted. One of whom lives only 10 minutes from me. So I love being able to see their lives now. And, you know, whenever I see her, she likes to pull up the pictures of she and I from when I first met her in China. Mm-hmm. So for her, that's, you know, another connection to her past that kind of brings her some peace and some hope.
Yeah, makes the world seem like a smaller place, probably.
It does. I used to be surprised when I would find that friends knew each other, but now I just kind of expect.
Yeah.
Just because of how, the world is so big, but it really is so small.
Yeah, and God makes those connections and brings us all together.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I love that. So in 2008, you established Into the Field, which is your mission to serve the servants around the corner and around the world. Mm-hmm. So tell us why you started that ministry.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, my background from school is in business and communications. And I have always loved the people and different cultures. And after college, I had the opportunity to travel with a group called Up With People. And during that year, there were 120 of us from 23 different countries that visited 6 countries, staying with host families and doing service in each of them. And when I came back from my first trip to China, the one that I was asked about in Alaska, I was asked to serve on the board for that, the ministry that we had partnered with. And as a combination of that, my involvement with other organizations, I saw that there really was an opportunity and a need for someone to walk alongside and serve these groups. You know, I believe that we are all called to go out into the field and serve, but the field that we serve in and how we serve is going to be different for each of us. And Into the Field has become a vehicle to kind of help those with their serve.
Wow. So while you were visiting China, making those connections, you were serving in China in 2012, and you met another very special little girl. So tell us about your journey to Olivia.
Yeah. Well, and that it actually started the year before in 2011. I was at a large foster home, and it developed a special relationship with a couple who helped to coordinate the teams. And I committed to come back the following summer with some folks with me. Midway through the year, they told me that they had moved to a smaller foster home about 5 minutes down the road. And I was already committed to go back to the larger home, but said I wanted to take a day for us to come and see them and to do some activities with with their kids who didn't get as many visitors because of their size. A lot of times you can look back in hindsight and see how God has orchestrated things so perfectly. And this is one of those times. My dad, who has never had any interest in going to China, asked at Christmas how I would feel about him joining me. And of course, I was excited. And on that day, we went over to Agape. I did meet a special little girl. Agape is a special place with a special heart. The kids who live there all have osteogenesis imperfecta, or brittle bone disease, as it's more commonly known. Usually, when I am at the foster homes or in the orphanage settings, I pray for the kids, for their families to come soon. But when I met Olivia, I just had this overwhelming sense that instead of praying for her family, that I was her family. And my dad had a very similar response to her. And like the pictures that we have from that day showed a different type of connection than just a smile and pose for the picture smile. I'd always dreamed of being a wife and a mom. But since I was and I am still waiting to see if my prince is ever coming, I figured that the mom part of the dream was on hold too. As you and I had talked about, I think parenting is hard enough when you have two engaged parents who are actively engaged with parenting. And sometimes life circumstances result in single parent families, but I never dreamt that I would be initiating single parenthood. But part of the dilemma too with Olivia is that her file wasn't ready. And I certainly hadn't started any paperwork because that was not on my radar. However, the month before our visit, my friends had asked her orphanage to start working on our file. And they said they would do that in August, which would have been 3 months later. I got home and I called a friend who had adopted from China several times, and she said, "Let's pretend for a minute I'm going to do this. What do I do?" And she laughed and said she wondered if I was going to call her before she called me. And she could, because she could just tell that Olivia and I were a match. So I called the person she told me to. I didn't even check another agency. She just said, "Call Carla." So I called Carla. And Lifeline was and is a perfect match for me.
They're
Carla.
an adoption agency,
Yeah, I'm
Lifeline.
sorry. Yeah, Lifeline is the adoption agency. They're located in Alabama, and not only help with international adoptions to China and other countries, but are also involved with helping domestic birth moms with their plans, and have what they call their unadopted program. So working with kids that will never be in a position to be adopted. But Carla outlined, what I needed to do, and telling me each step of the way that there was no guarantee that we would be able to be matched because of how files were prepared and released. But we marched forward, and at each milestone and each writing of a check, she would ask again if I wanted to continue, knowing that there was no guarantee. And each time I emphatically said yes. And finally, in March, I received Olivia's file, and we were officially matched. And on July 1, 1 year and 10 days after meeting her, Olivia and I were declared forever family. And we've now been together 6.5 years.
Aw, and how old was Olivia when she came home?
She was 4.5.
Four and a half.
Yeah.
Precious. And that was July of 2013.
Yep, July 1st, 2013.
Aw. And then, but you weren't done. God wasn't done, we should
Yeah, yeah.
say. Next came Callie. So tell us how God led you to her.
Well, in the fall of 2014, so Olivia had been home not quite a year and a half. Olivia said to me, "Hey, mommy, when are we going to go to China and get my sister?" To which I replied, "No time soon," because we had, things were going really smoothly with the two of us. We were kind of hitting our stride, and no reason to disrupt that. But at the beginning of January, for some reason, I felt drawn to go to Lifeline's website and to look at and pray for some of the waiting kids there. Something I'd never done before, because of some of the other work that I do, I see so many kids that are in need of families that I hadn't gone proactively to Lifeline's site. But there I saw Callie's face, and I kept being drawn back to her. And so once again, I called Carla and said, "Can I see this file?" And she laughed. And in God's sense of humor, right as my beloved Ohio State Buckeyes are kicking off in their national championship game They're in 2015. Literally, they were running down the field to kick the ball. My email dinged with her file, kind of as if God was saying, okay, Jen, who's more important, these Buckeyes or this little girl? So I looked at her file, and it scared me a little bit because I am so not a medical person. I'm the kind of person that passes out giving blood. And so I was finally starting to feel good about Olivia and her bones and her surgeries and rods and all that stuff. And Callie's file said that her special need was neurologically related. I was not sure that I was ready for that. But the next day, I started a class, a course called Perspectives and World Missions. And I don't really remember much of what was said or who the speaker was, but I do remember it saying, being said that if we truly believe that God is in control, that he has a plan and he only wants what is best for us, then we should be seeking in all that we do, in all that we think, in all that we pray, in all situations, to find how God can be glorified. So they said, if before we were to make a decision, we ask, is this glorifying God? Would that affirm or change the decision we were making? And I knew that while there were obviously some very real things to consider from logistics and, you know, can I manage what her diagnosis might met, that most of the reasons that were kind of on my no or my con list, my pro con list, were really pretty selfish and more convenience-based responses versus God-glorifying responses. So on Christmas Eve of 2015, we landed back home in Columbus as a family of three.
Wow. Well, let's just dig in a little bit because you had shared with me with her medical diagnosis in her file.
Mm-hmm.
What did that say? Because then you reached out to the local hospital.
Right. So her file said that she had hydrocephalus and evidence of a brain bleed, which was likely due to her size when she was found. But I knew nothing about any of this. So we are so blessed to have Nationwide Children's Hospital here in Columbus and amazing resources. But I didn't know anyone in the neuro department. So I kind of went on their website and I, you know, searched her diagnosis and up came some different surgeons. I'm like, oh, he looks like a nice guy. So I sent him an email saying, hey, here's what China says. Here are a couple of videos of her. What do you think? And in my head, I thought chances of him responding to me are somewhere between slim and none because, you know, neurosurgeons are pretty busy guys and he didn't know me. And if he did respond to me, that it would probably be a while. And I only had a week to make the decision because Callie's list was or file was going to be going back on China's shared list. But to my utter amazement and what can only be described as a God thing, 3 hours later, while I was at Awana with Olivia, my phone rang. I almost didn't answer it because I was talking to a friend, but I looked down and I noticed that the number on the phone was one of the hospital's numbers. So I answered it and he said, hey, this is Dr. So-and-so. I've looked at it and obviously I can't guarantee anything and tell her unless I were to meet her, but I'm not seeing that what they're saying is real. So I'm like, okay. You know, again, he said, you know, I can't guarantee, like Carla said, there's no guarantees. But to me, that just was gave me another level of peace because it didn't jump out at him and saying, yes, this is definitely what this is. Wow. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
So you got Callie officially in December of 2015.
Uh-huh.
And she was 4 years old when you brought her home. And what is her health diagnosis now?
She's amazing. She has no official diagnosis.
No hydrocephalus, none of that.
Nope. She, you know, she gets some OT and some speech and things like that, which are not uncommon for kids who have, you know, spent their life in an orphanage, you know, and she gets some wiggle breaks at school and is working, as many kids do, on learning how to kind of regulate herself. But yeah, she is a joyful, energetic little girl, you know, kind of has rocked our world a little bit because her energy level is very different from Olivia's. But I know that happens in biological families too. So I think it's easier for it to jump out in adoptive families. But I know that it's a real factor in biological as well.
Yeah. So how are the girls doing now? How have they adjusted, both of them, Callie and Olivia?
They're amazing. You know, Olivia, as far as the OI is related, the brittle bones, she is really pretty mild and has only ever broken her femur. She's broken it several times and has a rod in it, and we go and we get her bone juice infusions. But she's doing amazing. You know, I probably limit her more than she needs to be limited. Because there's always that little bit of fear in the back of your head of, okay, this is a possibility. So how much do I just let her go and live? But I did have a very wise friend that I met through, actually, when we were in China, meeting Callie, one of the moms that was in our travel group, adopting her son, has OI herself. And so I was talking to Jamie, and I sometimes will message her, you know, looking for advice since she has lived with it. And I, you know, as far as what can and should I let her do. And one of the things she said to me was, Jen, the pain that she will feel for not being included will last longer than any pain she would feel from a broken bone. I was like, okay. And I remember asking that, especially a couple years ago, as it related to one of her classmates, Olivia's classmates, was going to be having a roller skating birthday party. And I remember thinking, okay, roller skating brittle bones doesn't sound like a good match to me. But so I asked Jamie, and she said that, and I'm like, okay. And that was on a Wednesday, and the roller skating party was on Saturday. And so on Thursday, I sent a message to the mom, and I said, okay, Olivia can come to the roller skating party, you know, with Jamie's voice talking in the back of my head. Friday, I'm sitting at my desk and I get a call from Olivia's school. Olivia's fallen down and can't get up, and she had broken her leg. And I was like, oh man, I can't even win for trying. I just said I was going to let her do it, and I don't even get any points for saying yes. But back to your question, the girls are doing amazing. You know, it's, and Callie is, we're, both girls are surrounded by they're in two different schools, but are both surrounded by amazing teachers, and Callie's intervention specialist, and people around her just are all a part of Team Callie and wanting to help her be the best that she can be. And that's what everybody's goal is.
Love that. So Jen, how do you parent two children, you know, with all of those, you know, various challenges as a single adoptive mom?
Not to sound cliche, but with a lot of prayer, because that's a lot of prayer. And, you know, to use another popular saying, I work on building my village, you know, but it likely in my case, and as I'm sure in every adoptive moms and especially single moms, you know, I have several different villages in each different areas of my life. You know, I work hard to get close to those who raise their hand and say, I'll help, and have to work really hard on getting over any feelings of guilt for asking. You know, I had someone early on comment to me, like I was sharing a struggle, and someone commented early on to me, well, you chose this. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to say, well, you chose to have biological kids and you have hard days too, but I didn't. But because of that, I'm very hesitant a lot of times to share when I'm struggling, which is probably to my detriment because I don't do as good of a job as I should with taking care of myself. But I have worked on developing some really close friends. Some I know in person, like, and I see and are a part of my daily life. Others I've never met face to face, but I've met through, you know, the power of Facebook. And we have a single adoptive mom from China Facebook group, and some single moms that, you know, we've done some traveling together and have ongoing group text messages together. And I think one of the things that's been hard for me, but I know is true in everybody's life, is to know that the people in our villages, the people in our support networks are going to change. And to expect it and it's okay and not to take it personally. I've always struggled with feeling like I was one si step outside of the group, whatever group that might be. And so whenever someone kind of moves on and I get left behind, it's always been something that I've struggled with feeling that, oh, they don't like me anymore or something like that. But just coming to the realization that things are going to change. And, you know, when I've come home with the girls, things are going to change too, because not only do I have to f now make them my priority and taking care of them and their needs, you know, Callie is very easily overwhelmed in large groups. And so needing to sometimes say to people, we can't do that because I know what is going to do to or for her. You know, yeah, so we've been working really hard and her team at school has been great at helping to give her words to her feelings. You know, they say, Mommy, this is too much right now. And so that we can just kind of step back.
The having your village or your team or your tribe is so important because it can feel very isolating when you're a foster or adoptive parent, whether you're a single or a couple. It can still feel very isolating. So I think it's great that you're finding, you know, that network of people who are a support to you, whether it's a virtual online group, but also people that you're actually interacting with. What about your parents? I know you mentioned your dad when that the first trip to China when you first met Lydia. How is your family? Are they a support to you?
My family is amazing. You know, I am blessed to only live about 15 minutes from them. My ministry's office is actually in the office suite that my dad owns. He's an attorney. He'll never retire because he just would be too bored. So I see him almost daily. And you know, when Olivia and I have early doctor's appointments, which happens frequently, he will often come and help get Callie on the bus, or help pick me up, or you know, just doing what they need to. So I am so tremendously, tremendously blessed by them.
That is awesome. I love that. When we're walking in our God-given calling, it does require sacrifice, but I find the sacrifice to be worth it. How do you feel? Do you find the sacrifices are worth it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it my life, you know, if I were to look at my life, looks nothing like I imagined it would. You know, and in many ways it's harder, and but in so many more ways it is richer and it's fuller. Yeah, so absolutely.
Always worth it.
Worth always worth it. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the work of your ministry into the field.
Okay. Well, as you said earlier, Into the Field exists to serve the servants around the corner and around the world. Sometimes it's serving a person who has a passion for serving others, but isn't sure how to get started and walking alongside them to get their ministry launched and helping them with the various details that are involved with that. Sometimes it is serving the body of Christ, helping to provide opportunities for them to be equipped through things like trainings, or a variety of things. Sometimes it's adoptive families, giving them an opportunity to do their fundraising through Into the Field. You know, there are a number of different organizations to do that, and so Into the Field's just a smaller one. Do some granting. I have a dream of growing our granting capability, but it's not quite. We've done a couple, but I'd like us to do much more. And then also through hands-on serving. We actually are in the process of kicking off a project to serve a hospital in China. You and I haven't talked about this because it came up since you and I last talked. There's Olivia goes to a small Christian school, and there is a family at our school who are from China and are here because the husband is doing research at Ohio State. And she came up to me yesterday, actually, and was telling me that her husband is from Hubei province, and is just a 3-hour bus ride from Wuhan, which, as most people know, is kind of the epicenter of the virus over there right now. And their friend that they were talking to is a doctor at one of the hospitals in his hometown. And he said that their particular hospital has no masks, no covering equipment, anything like that, protection equipment for the doctors and for the staff there, because they're so, not only because of their size and because they're small, it's small by China standards, but because of their proximity to Wuhan, you know, everything else and all the government supply is getting diverted over there. So we are kicking off a project to help raise some funds so that we can serve and send something specifically to this hospital. One of the neat things too is that these friends of mine who are here are believers. Their family in China are as well. And so we know that this is a way that we're serving the body of Christ as well as doing hands-on serving, because we are getting it to people that, you know, will use it well and be good stewards of those gifts.
I love all that you are doing through the ministry. So where can our listeners learn more about Into the Field?
We, like everybody else, are on Facebook. So Into the Field, as well as our website is intothefield.org. And I have Twitter, but I never use it. I need someone to teach me how to Twitter, and I have an Instagram, but I haven't fully figured that one out yet. I need somebody just to sit down and say, okay, Jen, do this, do this, do this.
There's so many things, right? And they take up so much time, but I'll make sure in our show notes that go with this show that we will put a link to your website, intothefield.org. Okay. And also when you mentioned Lifeline, the adoption agency that used to adopt from China, I'll make sure that we also include a link to Lifeline for any of our listeners who were, you know, maybe their ears perked up or their heart started to beat faster when they heard that, because maybe they're considering adoption. So
yeah, well, and you know, I'm always happy to chat. You know, I'll give you you can include my email too if you want to.
Okay.
So that if anybody has any questions either about, you know, what we've talked about specifically today, whether it's on the ministry side of things or the adoption side or the single mom side, I'm pretty much an open book, as you can tell by how I kind of ramble off in lots of different directions. So, they can reach out to me about anything.
All right. Well, we'll make sure our listeners can find you that way. And as we wrap up, Jen, any last thoughts on your heart that you'd like to share with our listeners before we go?
I guess one, as it relates to the single mom thing, if you are single and have the dream of being a mom, know that God's answer of not now does not mean not ever. And then also, you know, there's a verse in Psalm 127, verses 4 and 5. And here, I'll read it real quick. This is from the Message version. It says, "Don't you see that children are God's best gift? The fruit of the womb is his generous legacy. Like a warrior's fistful of arrows are the children of a vigorous youth. Oh, how blessed are you, parents, with your quivers full of children. Your enemies don't stand a chance without you. You'll sweep them off your doorstep." Obviously, this is, in this case, this is versus talking about kids, but I was talking to some folks and started thinking about how this also can relate to our friends and our support and our tribe. And I was curious, you know, when it talks about a fistful or an other, your quiver's full, I was curious as to how big a quiver is. Mm-hmm. And a quiver can actually hold a maximum of 6 arrows. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're not called to necessarily have these huge, big groups of friends and huge groups of support. But sometimes it's just those small, intimate groups where we can find that support. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes we might have multiple quivers. We might have different groups for different things. But it's not, I think, at least when you're growing up, you think about friends and stuff as to how many do I have? And now we start shifting that mentality to it's the quality over the quantity. You know, there's another little saying I saw someplace that said, I'd rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies. you know, focusing on the value versus the quantity. And so,
love that. Awesome. So thank you, Jen, for sharing your story with all of us and for all that you're doing to serve other servants through your ministry.
Well, thank you. It's been a joy to be here with you and to share and just share a little bit of my heart.
Love that. Thank you so much for doing that. And our listeners, I hope that you were inspired by Jennifer's story. Be sure to check out her website at intothefield.org. She's also on Facebook and Instagram if she can figure it out. We'll help her. Well, we can help her do that. So I want to also thank our amazing listeners for stepping up with a $20 monthly gift for our 2020 vision to launch Care Portal in our third Capital Region County here in upstate New York. So far, more than 600 Capital Region children in crisis have been served through local churches using our Care Portal platform. We are in Albany and Schenectady counties so far and have a goal to launch one more new county this year. And you can help us do that by donating online at justicefororphansny.org. Just click on donate and choose the 2020 vision option. And we just thank you for caring for kids in crisis. We know that some are called to adopt and some are called to foster, but we are all called to care. And I'm neck deep in edits with my writing coach for my book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. So please stay tuned to this podcast and our other social media for news and updates on the release of the book. We at JFO are grateful for our faithful listeners, and we want to hear from you. Please leave a comment or contact us through our website. Again, that's justicefororphansny.org. Let us know what you would like to hear on the show, what topics interest you most. We exist here to serve you, so we want to hear how we can do that best. And you can find and follow more episodes of Orphans No More on your favorite podcast platform and also right on our website. Again, that's justicefororphansny.org. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to being with you next time right here on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.